Do the next right thing to make your marriage sing.
All I ever wanted was to be in love with you. When your eyes met mine, I knew that this was really true. All the flowers of spring.
Hello again.
Could never
make the music of marriage.
With Bob and
Evie. We're here on a lovely morning to talk about marriage again.
Do you ever get tired of talking about marriage? We do. No, not really.
We have marriage vitamin juice. What was that that Lucy had? Are you tired? Are you struggling with your marriage? Are you ready to give up? That's what we should do. We're going to make a formula that will sell soon. It's only $20 a bottle. And it's guaranteed to perk up your marriage in ways you never expected. we'll fill you in later.
Or
is that when that really happens?
The Indian elixir from the Andy Griffith Show, you know, it'll put a light in your eye and a spring in your step.
Okay, well, anyway, we have quite a lot of notes today that we made. We don't usually often get through them all because we suddenly get weird ideas and get distracted, but we started last week talking about restoration in marriage and, you know, war and conflict can start, it can be, any conflict can is everywhere, we all know, in our lives, and sadly, because we are flawed, we're not as perfect as we were when God made us, or as we will be again in heaven. If we know Jesus and we are committed to Him. So we, in our Music of Marriage show, try to pull from what we read in Scripture, which has been our guide book. And I think it's not just been ours, it's kind of been around for a while. A lot of people have relied on it, and it's worked. So despite our flaws and weaknesses that we all have, we still need a perfect standard, right? It's like if you're building something as a carpenter, you don't want your 1 foot ruler to suddenly become shorter or longer. You still want it to be 12 inches, even if you're not building something as accurately as you should. The standards are important, and that's something missing today. Well, erosion of standards, I would say.
And even if it was correct, you still have to measure twice and cut once.
That's right. I measure 3 or 4 times at least. But restoration versus deception is kind of what we're going to talk about today. We talked about the disintegration, the destruction and alienation in relationships and in marriage, and the battle for our mind. So as our mind goes, so goes our life. How you think determines how you live. I'm just reading, it sounds like it, because I am. Your thoughts are the tip of the spear. Because if I don't read it, I'll start talking about cookies or the fall leaves or something, that's which I'm doing now, so I better start reading again.
That's a military phrase the Navy SEALs use. The
right.
Tip of the spear goes in the direction it's pointed, which sounds kind of obvious, but it's basically saying that wherever you point that thing is, it's going to go, and there will be the consequence of your shot.
And emotions follow our thinking. So can you actually pick up your thoughts from the track that they're on about someone or something and just pick them up and put them on another track? Can you actually do that? Have you ever done that before? Have you done that before? I have done it. And we all can do it. And that's what we're actually supposed to be doing. So we're talking about the battle for the mind because we're going to pick one track to roll on or another. And our will, what we decide and choose to do, follows our emotions, which follows our thinking, and
and
the thinking is what drives everything. It's in the lead position. What's in the lead position in our lives and marriages is how we think.
Yeah, because there are no you might say personality traits or you know, ways you've learned growing up that are just second nature to you that escape the will. So whatever you've experienced in the past or continue to experience, you still have to make a decision. And that's where the will comes in. And that will of yours is guided by your thoughts and often by your emotions, but it should be more guided by the truth, because emotions are not reliable and your thoughts aren't always the right thoughts.
That's right. Our minds are the initial battlefield upon which our life is contested. And it is there in our mind, really, that the battle is won or lost. That's really critical, and that means important. And critical thinking is something that, when I was educated, thankfully, I feel like that was kind of very fundamental part, is learning how to be a critical thinker, not learning what to think, but how to think. Because the deception is all the things that come at you. Think this, believe that. This is what you need. This will save your life. This will make you not get sick. This will, that will. This is why this war started. This is why this got. Things come at us all the time. And we have to, especially today, you know, really stop and think critically, because so easily we're led down wrong paths. Just in ourselves, in our own kitchen, let alone when you now expose yourself to the news and the world at large and social media, of course, which is full of, you know, you can, there's a lot of fakery going on, and it's so easy to deceive today because of the digital flexibility, where people who know how to get into the computers and work them, they can just go in there and flick a switch, so to speak. We don't know how to make these computer work, but these code guys like my sons and my son-in-law, they go in and they build the code. They go inside all those websites, all those social media, and they can also do computer-generated images. They can actually make people sound like Queen Elizabeth when they talk, so you think, and they can make you look like Queen Elizabeth, so you could literally go on TV and be made to look like Queen Elizabeth and sound like her, no matter who you are. So it's a really wildly deceptive world. And when it comes to marriage, of course, it's the same awareness that we need to have. Like, wait a minute, you know, what's really behind this? And what is the truth? And I think Margaret Mead said, the truth is always simple and beautiful. And untruth, lies, untruth are...
What is not true is complicated and dirty.
Ugly. Complicated and ugly.
She said dirty, I think.
Well, regardless, it's not great.
Can someone look up and tell us who's right? Because otherwise, we will both be sure that we're right.
So how can this world and our marriages become beautiful and simple again? Now, we are people who were in, you know, the 70s was our heyday before this network, the web world that we live in, that we've been caught in, this web of the digital age. And what happened to just looking at the beautiful fall leaves? What happened to just, I mean, we used to be outside all the time. The kids were outside all the time. But we're so deceived by the allure of whatever it is on the internet, and we're so not aware how we're deceived. But in our marriages and in our homes, we need to learn how to change our way of thinking, because knowing you're deceived is one thing, and that takes effort to study and analyze.
I just wanted to add there that, and that's why it's important to really guard what comes into your mind or comes before your eyes. As circumspect as you might think you live, you are affected one way or another by what you ingest. Your output is determined by the input. Same with a computer.
Or TV.
Yeah, TV. So
just stick with Andy Griffith and you'll be fine.
Yeah, there you go. But, Steve Lawson of the Ganeer Ministries said that your minds are the initial battlefield upon which our life is contested. You said that already? Oh, Evelyn quoted it. Well,
see, great minds think alike, yeah. Or something.
Yeah, that's another thing.
I'm trying to be complimentary. Great minds think alike.
I think we should contest that statement. Go ahead. You were on a roll there. Go.
Well, I'm always on a roll, and I don't want to roll over you. And you're, and see, that's what you have to do in marriage. I have to notice, when am I on a roll? I did eat some chocolate this morning, so that really kind of got me a little more energetic. But when we change our way of thinking, we can restore our marriage. We want to talk about this. Restoration happens when you understand that you yourself are being deceived. How are we ourselves deceived? How am I, Evie Smith, possibly deceived? Am I not right all the time? Is my perspective and my habits and my style not just right on? Well, it doesn't always come across that way to Bob and sometimes to other people. I do a pretty good job of trying to cover it up, but we...
Why is it important to know how whether we're deceived or not in any way?
Because we often... The problems that we have in marriage and relationship, it comes from a negative viewpoint, obviously. You know, there's something that rubs us the wrong way. It could be nothing was wrong with the other person, but we just didn't sleep well enough, and so everything looks wrong to us, and we're making a problem out of things that we shouldn't. So now we have to analyze, like for me, am I eating chocolate too late in the day so that my sleep quality is low so that I'm on the edge of agitation over nothing? Simple things like not getting good sleep or over caffeinating yourself
also
can cause a big problem.
Taking drugs to sleep can be very habit forming. They are addictive, certain classes, and they will also affect your emotions and your mind really during the day.
So now, are we willing to dismantle and discard those things, acknowledge them? What are they that could possibly be putting me in that position? Because what we're going to talk about is how each person in the marriage or in the relationship has to be willing to change something. Mm-hmm. And that's often the stumbling block. I know with me, what do you mean I have to change? I'm right. I'm right about 99.9% of everything, so... Why would I even go there thinking about what I have to change, except that the other person isn't happy with something about me, or my husband isn't, or a friend or something. So it is my responsibility to think. And so this requires the ability to admit, the ability to become humble and to admit that you have... that you're willing to work on changing something.
But you see, if you have an attitude like you think, well, that you're right most of the time, your spouse is not, what you're actually wrong about is that you're setting up a negative viewpoint of your spouse, and that sets up negative expectations of them, because it'll affect, obviously, how you treat them. And...
Same with children, just by the way. I know in home life, if children hear, or if your spouse hears, you are blank, you know, you are a blank, you are this, you are that. Now you have imprinted on their brain something that's really not even true, because no one is that, because everyone has the ability to change that. Mm-hmm. So what you want to appeal to in your spouse and in yourself is what you could be, you know, or what things would work out better if we were like this. Not just you are that, so label and leave. This label and leave mentality mm-hmm. is not helping family life or marriages or community life.
So if a wife says he'll never change, well, then prove her wrong and change your ways. And on the other hand, the wife also has to change her concept of her husband never changing and think of possibilities. So that's where that heads.
Because, you know, with God, we can believe that nothing is impossible. And if, especially if we're a Christian and we're saying nothing will ever change, then we're basically denying that God can change anything. And a lot of times he waits until things are really dead, like he did so often in the scripture. You know, he waited till his friend Lazarus was dead and in the grave 3 days. And they're like, well, what was that about, you know? But then he comes and raises him from the dead. So that's, I think, just there to encourage us that when something looks dead, you know, God can make it come back to life again in our relationship.
And this plays itself out in so many ways. When you establish expectations based on a negative thought, it affects how you treat your spouse. Or negative expectations based on not believing what God has said in his word, because God was the author of marriage, and he's also the author of the Christian life, and his spirit is the leader of all truth. He leads us into truth and empowers us to do what he wills.
So that we're not deceived.
Yeah, but if you're dealing with these wrong expectations, and I would even say sinful, because you know they're not pleasing to God, negative expectations of someone or thoughts about someone. And they'll have consequences, like, for instance, a wife will often usurp the husband's role because she doubts his ability to lead. A husband might complain about small things she does because he doubts her ability to measure up to what he likes or what he appreciates. So negative thoughts toward your spouse simply are not building blocks for a solid marriage. Negative thoughts are destructive, and everyday little things are affected by those thoughts toward your spouse. And so following the golden rule is the important thing when it comes to the way you're thinking, doing unto others as you would have them do to you. That's really key, because you don't want someone to think, have a low opinion of you or low expectations of you, or don't think that you could actually pull off certain things that are important, whether it's, you know, budgeting, financing, or your job or whatever it is you do, or raising children. You know, this the conflict in this world is great enough that you don't need to complicate it with this kind of stuff. What you need is to create as positive an atmosphere as you can in your marriage and in your family, and then things will fall into place.
And you can create that turnaround in your marriage by simply, you know, when you mess up, which we all do all the time, you just start over, you know, and you say, okay. And then you always have hope, because you know you can start over. No one's stopping you from behaving differently. No one's stopping you from thinking differently. No one is literally stopping you from acting differently. It's your own mind and that battle over, you know, do I take that extra cookie? Do I say this thing to my husband, which has this slight little cut underneath what I'm saying, so that it sort of sounds like I'm not saying anything cutting, but I really am. And then that causes a problem. But
or do you know things that bother each other? You know each other's hot buttons, so that when you really want to get back at somebody, you know, you just press that button and it sends them off the deep end, you know. But so I'm sure every married couple has experienced that to some degree, unless you're perfect. But and that's not a bad thing to strive for. But at any rate, that's not a good thing to do, is to press hot buttons, things that you know are going to annoy the other person, or if you've been criticized, using that technique or method to get back at the other person in retaliation is also very unkind. And there are better ways to to establish a consensus of thinking.
Well, the weapons of war to battle the negative thoughts we have toward our spouse or anyone, the weapons are obviously not what come natural, the right weapons. That's usually the last thing we feel like doing, but when we pick them up and actually use them, then we find that things change for the better. And Bob Dylan wrote in one of his songs, "You remember only about the brass ring. You forget all about the golden rule." That's a song we're going to play in a few minutes called "Gonna Change My Way of Thinking." "Gonna Change My Way of Thinking," Bob Dylan writes. He recognized where the battle is in life, in relationships. It's in our mind. The battle for so much of our life, what will make life good, what will be successful, what will be peaceful. Usually we say war is to create peace. Well, why didn't we just create peace in the first place? Like, why waste all this effort and problems and stress on war to get peace? Why not just circumvent all that, save the money,
go straight to peace,
and just try to live peacefully? And that's a change in our mind. And I think we really all need to think about thinking and think critically, and not just and by critically I mean think about and ask God to show you where am I going wrong, you know. Give me wisdom. And he promises that. That's a promise. And I've asked for wisdom, and I'm like, wow, I feel like I'm getting wisdom. I guess it's because I asked for it. But self-control, love toward our enemies, toward our spouse who's treating us not well, impossible situations. God, you know, and then our way of thinking will change, and that's what God's there for. He's there to intervene because he's the great peacemaker.
Yeah, and wherever you are on that continuum, whether you've preempted peace or whether you've created conflict and now have to get to peace, peace is still always the end goal and always achievable when you do the next right thing. And I think that's what Bob Dylan's getting at here in this song, "Gonna Change My Way of Thinking."
Change my way of thinking. Bang myself a different set of rules. Gonna change my way of thinking, make myself a different set of rules. Gonna put my good foot forward, stop being influenced by fools. So much depression, can't keep track of it no more. Said there's so much depression, can't keep track of it no more. Sons becoming husbands, dozen mothers, old men turning young daughters into whores. knocking on your hand. Spots on your shoulders, spots on your back and on your hand. Swords piercing your side, blood and water flowing through the land. Well, don't know.
We're back with The Music of Marriage with Bob and Evie, and we are talking about restoration and deception and the battle for the mind, basically. And the battle for the mind is always on. And so we've talked about a few dynamics that affect marriage, and there's another dynamic that affects marriage, and that's having warring desires in your mind, desires that are at war with unity of a relationship. You know, too many things often hinder the development of a favorable dynamic in marriage. And there's a verse from James 4 that says, "What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you?" So that's really true. Desires, if they're conflicting, you've got to take inventory of what's causing that and get rid of the ones that aren't producing harmony in your marriage. And we are so easily deceived, because often we'll think, well, you know, I bring my wife flowers, I say I love you, but, you know, I work, you know, and provide for her and things like that, and that's all good stuff. But it's easy to count the ways you love your spouse, you love your wife, but it takes deep reflection and honesty to count the things you love more than your spouse. So those insidious loves are so entrenched within us that we're often blind to them, and that's part of the deception. For instance, you know, comfortable habits are hard to break, and attitudes are so second nature that we don't even notice them. Bad attitudes or caustic attitudes. And the desire for love and approval from other people can be a subtle substitute for a spouse's affection. The longing for material things that feed our ego can consume our time and our attention and energy. Overworking, obviously, is another thing. The space where our innermost desire for true love dwells has no room for counterfeit loves. All these can become loves. We don't think of them as loves. We just think of it as life, you know. Well, that's life, you know. It's just what you do, right? Well, it's more than that. So counterfeit loves often reign atop the hierarchy of our devotion unless we're vigilant to ward them off. And over time, these pseudo-loves will override marital love if left unchecked. And this is one of the things we address in our book called How to Make Your Marriage Sing. And that's basically the bottom line, is there are desires in our heart that can compete with desires for love for our spouse, compete for the love for us, our spouse, and our time. And, you know, time can be seen as either love or not love, depending on what we spend most of our time on. Now, obviously, we have to make a living, so, you know, that is a form of love. But what other time have we left for our husband or our wife at the end of the day or at the end of the month or at the end of the week? So all of that can be entangled and overgrown with weeds, you know, over time, and you don't want that to happen. You don't want your first love to fade into a distracted life, an encumbered life. You want to maintain a singular devotion for the things that are important in your marriage, and your wife and your husband is the most important thing in your marriage. And so they have to be predominant as a focus.
It's interesting how our own busyness, our projects, that's what life is. We're all busy. We're all working. And there's certainly nothing wrong with that. I just realize myself how much of my life is driven by, you know, my interests and desires to accomplish or to gain something. And I think how much better if our lives are driven by what, you know, what's going to serve and interest others, be it the interest of our spouse. So even though we may be very busy, even to find ways to connect, to stay connected, even if you're, you know, apart for whatever reasons that life brings us. And I think, you know, God knows about all the challenges that can come in between us. And a lot of them are very noble things, like say you're caring for a mother-in-law or a mother. And I guess I'm on. I'm not hearing myself, but I guess that I'm on. Okay, thank you. Anyway, so I have seen in homes where friends and relatives of ours have cared for a parent, and it took more and more and more of their time and energy, and how they gracefully work that into their life and find ways to sneak off to the movies or keep their marriage intact despite this, I don't know if intrusion is the right word, but it kind of is. There are a lot of things that intrude on our time, and that doesn't mean it's a bad thing. But we can often be deceived into thinking that, well, I'm working hard, I'm making money, you know, what could be wrong? But we have to feed each other emotionally, too.
Mm-hmm.
So
exactly.
Being, and that requires, again, critically thinking, you know, how am I thinking of the other person, you know? And maybe think of surprising them, you know, like actually, you know, when you say, hey, my husband likes, you know, such and such, I'll stop by and pick that up and bring it to him in his work day. Or we all know of things that we can do when we really want to give somebody a lift and give our spouse the awareness that, you know, we're thinking of them and they're important to us.
Or surprise them with kindness by saying, even saying something in such a way, if you're trying to communicate something to your spouse, that is appealing to them as opposed to critical. I often think of the time, Evie, when you once said to me, you're my only source of romance. Brings a tear every time I think of it. But anyway, that was a sweet and kind way to ask for the attention you needed. And it brought instant clarity to me. But for her, I'm it. Was, you know, that was it. And at the time, I guess I was too busy to show you that. but you could have said, you never, you know, do this or that. And that would not have been, that wouldn't have been nearly as effective as what you did say kindly and indirectly.
I do that once in a while.
You do.
Just kidding.
Yeah, yeah.
But one of my favorite verses that I've had in a little frame is about the words of being like apples of gold and pictures of silver. And God is so creative. And, you know, we're musicians and we all love good music and a good song, and we can get lost in the beauty of it. And God is the creator of beauty and creativity and music and arts and all that. And when you read the Bible, the neat thing about it is that he's really cool, you know? It's not this mystery religious thing. I mean, all the things that you love are because God made them for you to love and enjoy. I mean, mm-hmm. The good things, you know. And the arts, and to describe what a word fitly spoken, that's what mm-hmm. It is, a word fit aptly, appropriately spoken, mm-hmm. is like apples of gold in pictures of silver. Now, where can you go with that except somewhere good? So yeah. If I think of what I'm going to say, and again, this is a battle for the mind, because my mind sometimes just chooses throwing rotten tomatoes, not apples of gold and pictures of silver.
Mm-hmm.
But
you God's throw a gold apple at me.
Gold just went up.
I'll cash it in.
Anyway, so thinking of the higher, that higher point of view, if we take every thought captive to the beauty, I mean, you can't go wrong. I mean, have you ever gone wrong saying something nice to your spouse or to anybody? But how often we take each other for granted, and we don't receive back what we could because we're not generating that response by being kind in the first place.
That's a good point. In fact, there is a Bible verse that says, take every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. And so the whole idea of taking a thought captive, as soon as you have a thought in your mind, captivate it, and if it's not a good thought, throw it out. You know, if it is, run with it.
Or if it could be hurtful or embarrassing or cutting or critical, that could be a good standard for social media.
Yeah.
Just don't say, so then why even have social media if all you can say is nice things? Like, what's the point? Well, that's fine. You can share pictures like you would at grandma's house. We would, or whatever. But why say the things that are going to be hurtful and divisive in the first place? I'm just thinking outside of our notes here.
I just heard a fact about social media that that a dislike emoji has been used 50 times more than a like these days, which is kind of disheartening in a way. It just shows
unless they're disliking something that should be disliked.
But that happens too. But I mean, both happen. You dislike what somebody said because you have a contrary point of view. But that just shows you how much division there is in this world today. And it's you don't want that in your marriage. Whenever there's division, you want to find out what's causing it and get back to unity. But to do that, you need to change your way of thinking, right? And also, you've got to, what we just said, you know, taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. Well, what would Jesus tell you to do in the situation, whatever situation you're in your marriage or relationship to your children? He said a lot of things. He's told us a lot of things to do, and we got to know what those are. And as a matter of fact, surprisingly enough, Steve Winwood and Eric Clapton have a song that addresses this, and it's called "Presence of the Lord." And we'd like to share that with you. It's from the Crossroads Eric Clapton Guitar Festival of 2007.
Welcome back to The Music of Marriage with Bob and Evie. That's at themusicofmarriage.com, where you can get our book, How to Make Your Marriage Sing. And we have original music and songs you can download, and podcasts that we're getting up to help you listen again or share. So this whole thing about restoring marriage by critically thinking, the battle for our minds, so we can discern where we are being deceived, because we have so much power within ourselves to make the right choice, but we have to be willing to have the humility to make that choice. And so, you know, restoring marriage requires honesty, which of course is thinking critically, and humility. That doesn't mean being a doormat, but, you know, a mirror doesn't lie. And like Eric Clapton just said about the presence of the Lord, when you're in the presence of, well, like God's word is like a mirror. It's perfect. You know, okay, you look into that lake, it's placid. You can see your reflection perfectly. Sometimes we don't like what we see. I often tend to not look in the mirror a lot and keep the lights off or low or something so I don't have to deal with reality or be discouraged. But same with our lives, right? Do I want to look at myself and say, you know, how am I thinking? How am I approaching people? What is my general attitude? Is it mostly about me? Seeking my own interests, my own comfort, my own whatever? I really have to admit, I'm not that interested in finding out how I have to change. So the humility that brings restoration comes from that honesty. It puts others' interests before your own. So put your spouse's interests before your own and see how things and the dynamics start to shift. When you look in the mirror, you see truth. So you're not deceived if you're willing to look at yourself.
But there's a rule you need to follow in order to do that, and that comes from the book of James, chapter 1, where he says, "But be doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he's like a man who looks intently at his face in a mirror. For he looks at himself and goes away and at once forgets what he was like."
Isn't that true? We look in the mirror, we go away, and we want to come back and check again, like we forget. And, you know, oftentimes we want to forget. But the problem is, then we don't really fix anything, like, oh, your lipstick's all out of the lines, or your hair is sticking out here or there, or you forgot, you know, to put your left earring on, or whatever it is. Looking in the mirror in our minds, that facing things for what they really are is how then we can change things to make them what they should be.
Well, talking about humility, how does it practically work itself out? Humility, for instance, admits when you're wrong about something and asks for forgiveness. It's not just a lowly position. It's caring enough about yourself to care for others. And humility is really an exalted position because it's the position of a servant. Even Jesus said, "I have not come to be served, but to serve." And therefore, God exalted him. And Jesus was a suffering servant as well. Being a servant will involve suffering. And the Apostle Paul promises that for the Christian. And if you're not suffering enough, maybe you're not following being doers of the word enough, because if you are, you'll have to suffer. But that suffering is a good thing. You know, Paul says about knowing Christ and the power of the resurrection and the fellowship of his sufferings. So you can't get redemption without suffering. But if you choose to avoid suffering because your idea of justice means you need to retaliate instead of humble yourself and accept criticism and accept an apology or, you know, accept the condition or a situation you're in that you can't change. Well, that takes suffering and it takes humility. And both of them are redemptive. And there's a connection between suffering and justice and redemption. So, in marriage, especially out of all our relationships, a deep emotional connection to a person is necessary. Right, Evelyn?
Yes.
You know, Romans 5:7 shows that there's a deeper emotional connection to a good person than to a person who is self-righteous, which is an interesting thought. You know, if you don't convert your knowledge to love, then that leads to self-righteousness, and in return, a weak emotional connection to others. And if you're not being good to your spouse, then the feelings will be gone, and you will not be able to define why they are gone. Like what we talked about last week in Gordon Lightfoot's song, he didn't know where he went wrong, but the feelings were gone, and he just couldn't get them back. Well, we quote unquote didn't go wrong. You went wrong there because you were focused on your feelings being gone and not on your wife's feelings being gone. Okay. So Gordon was a fabulous songwriter, and but he had a few weaknesses when it came to his marriages, and I don't want to overly criticize him, but because he was good enough to write a song that we can all relate to, and but see, when you're focused on your own feelings and not your spouse's feelings, that's when things go wrong. And when they go wrong enough, you're not sure why. Because your feelings, which are in really unreliable guides, your feelings and emotions have no reliability whatsoever. And so the emotional connection will be gone, and that is the death of a marriage. So that is, if your feelings are gone, the emotional connection in your marriage will be gone. But you don't want your marriage to die that way. You don't want it to go down in flames because of, you know, because of feelings and emotions, right, Evelyn?
No.
We'll have to come back to
understatement of my life. Okay.
Yes. Anyway.
The idea is, because we have to wrap this up, is that restoring relationships, restoring your relationship with your spouse happens when you stop, drop, and think. You know, the battle for your mind, humility is what will help you to do that. Saying, how am I in the way? How am I contributing? Even in the most subtle ways that I'm so used to and comfortable with. Or I feel justified in continuing to act this way because they keep acting that way. And sorry, it's a lifelong battle for the mind, lifelong battle for the marriage, really. Lifelong battle for my own, within my own self, to submit myself to the golden rule, because I just don't always feel like it, and neither do any of us. But the truth is the most reliable guide to a unified and deeper love relationship. Feelings are not that guide. Feelings are the gift that we get back in our marriage, in our relationship with our alienated friend on Facebook, father-in-law, whoever. The truth. And what is the truth? The truth is a person, a perfect person, who is love, who is the embodiment of love, who never cannot love. I am the way. I am the truth. The truth. I am the life. So if you want life, if you want to know the way, who says that about themselves? Jesus. He says that. So we go to him, and then he reveals to us, and before your eyes, it's absolutely mind-blowing how he can transform and make a life out of dead relationships again.
And he doesn't make this life in you. He doesn't transform your character just by the things that you know about the Bible and about Christianity, because, you know, knowledge puffs up, but love builds up, is what Paul says. So knowing without doing leads to pride, and pride comes before a fall and keeps you from being effective. You only learn by doing, but that doing has to come from the right source, is what we're talking about.
We're often lazy. I was saying to Bob, we don't want to do the work. We come home, we're tired. Just give me a remote, okay? If I have a remote, if I have good food in the fridge, my mattress is pretty comfortable, my bills are pretty much seem like they're going to get paid, I think. You know, just that's all I need, you know. I don't want to do any further work than that.
If you control the remote, then you will be remote, and so will your spouse.
Okay, that's a pretty good one, Bob. But if we have a brain and use our brain, the battle of the mind, then we will realize that every adversity, every failure, and every heartache carries with it the seed of an equivalent or greater benefit.
No, that was a quote from somebody. Who was it?
Napoleon Hill.
Oh, there you go. That's true.
It's a lot of truth in that. Every adversity, every failure, and every heartache carries with it the seed of an equivalent or greater benefit. But what are we going to do with that seed? Are we going to take the problems that we have and say, okay, that means we throw out the whole marriage. That means we throw out this day. That means we grumble and complain. No, we learn in our mind to recognize immediately that this conflict is able to be averted by the choices that we make and how we think toward one another. We need to think redemptively toward one another. Mm-hmm. And we need to be understanding, just like Christ is to us. He knows my failings, but he loves me anyway. And mm-hmm. so I should be to my spouse and to mm-hmm. my friends. And this is where we've got to use our head and make that connection in our life and in whatever situation that we find ourselves in with our spouse.
And using your head assumes that you have a brain. And on the lighter side of things, we have a clever little song for you to end up with, it sung by a famous scarecrow. If I only had a
That's
brain.
That's appropriate for Halloween. For fall.
Have a good week, folks. We'll see
the
you next week.
TheMusicOfMarriage.com. Bye.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain, I could
while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain. I'd unravel every riddle for any individual in trouble or in pain.
With the thoughts you'd be thinking, you could be another Lincoln if you only had a brain.
Oh, I could tell you why the ocean's near the shore. I could think of things I never thought before, and then I'd sit and think some more. I would not be just a nothing, my head all full of stuffing, my heart all full of pain. I would dance and be merry, life would be a ding-a-dairy if I only had a brain. Oh!